A good Nerev Shabbos. We are approaching Parshas Boy. These are fantastic Parshas. Parshas which give you the ability to imagine what the Jewish people went through in Mitzrayim. Now, I'm not talking about imagining the years that the Jewish people were there, enslaved, beaten, downtrodden, depressed, sad, and negative. Even if they even were sad and negative, we don't really know. We do know a lot about how the Jewish people were and how they devoted and sacrificed themselves, dedicated to their families, dedicated to the Eibishter. But it allows us an opportunity to focus on that year, the year of miracles of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. When I was in Eretz Yisrael, learning in yeshiva there in Teres Moshe, the mashgiach in yeshiva, his name is Rav Fishman, Rav Chanan Fishman, Shlita, and the mashgiach, he used to speak every other week back then, I think now he speaks every week, he used to speak every other week about the Parsha. 40 minutes, 45 minutes, he'd give a shmooze about that Parsha. He would alternate with the yeshiva, would speak the other week. And when it came to the Parshiyos of Shemois, Va'era, and Boy, in Bishalach, but mostly Va'era and Boy, the Mashkiach would go out of his way. It was unusual. He would give between an hour and a 2 hour long shmooze each of the weeks of Va'era and Boy. My Mashkiach is a very deep person, thoughtful person, and the shmuzim in general were Musar shmuzim, to develop yourself, to work on yourself. But the Parshiyos of Va'era and Boy, that's not what he did. He spent Va'era and Boy going through every single makkah in Mitzrayim in detail, in a way that you really could imagine yourselves having been there in Egypt. Think about that. You can imagine yourself. And he would spend hours, hours. And you'd think, like a guy like me who perhaps put my head down when the normal shmooze took place, that when it came to an hour, 2 hour long shmooze, I would probably pass out. Or Chassid Shalom didn't show up. Those shmoozim nobody missed. You were riveted. The story of the Jews in Mitzrayim for a full year, every nace, every miracle, imagining what it was before your very eyes, just try to think about it. The first makkah comes along, it's the makkah of dam, blood. What do we think of blood? I don't know, it was like fruit punch, Hawaiian punch, it was juicy, and okay, they didn't get to drink it, and like, if you were younger, maybe you got to do this by your mora, you know, your mother, that you come home, and they have this cool little thing. It's a cup in a cup. So it looks like there's blood on the outside, and there's really water on the inside, and you have a straw going to the outside and a straw going to the inside, and the mitzri would drink from the blood, and the Jews would drink from the water. It's so cute. They would get Hawaiian punch, and you got H2O. That wasn't what it was like. Blood, as any of you who might have spent some time in the living world, blood is thick. It oozes. And a lot of it smells terribly. Imagine yourself. Imagine just 1 hour of that. Every drop of water in Egypt, it turns into red, gross, maroon ooze that stinks and smells. And it doesn't just smell from the blood. Everything that was in that water just died. The fish, ugh! You're walking around to that putrid smell. I was in Sacramento a number of years ago. I was in Sacramento. I was 20 years old. I went with a group of friends. We did something called Seed. Seed was an opportunity to do Kiruv. I was 20 and we all went out there and I didn't know anything about Sacramento. We get there, just four of us. And we go to this community, KITC, Knesset Israel Torah Center. And it was our job every morning to be available to learn with people, but most people didn't show up, so we didn't do much. But on Shabbos and Sunday, when people had off, that was when we really got working. So on Sunday morning, each one of us had to give a different type of class. And I give a class, and at the end of the class, the people are still there. I remember I gave a class on Chesha Mishpat Halacha. I gave a class on Zen Nenav Ezelech Chaser. If you're enjoying something, and the other person whose object it is wouldn't lose, are you allowed to use it? I remember I said something, and there was the son of a conservative rabbi who was in that. Oh, he was starting up with me. I spoke about it. You have to love every Jew. I love everybody, not just the Jews. Okay, fine. But after that, the people stuck around, and there was this big hulking guy, and he started to use it as a Q&A session. He'll ask some questions. So he asked me a question. He's a big guy. I found out later, this big guy, I was like, wow, he asks the most questions. He's so involved. His name, I thought he told me his name was Dan Schwartz. And we're like, wow, this big guy. It turns out his name wasn't Dan Schwartz. It was Dan Swart, and he was not yet Jewish. That's why he's probably most into learning. But anyway, he was involved. And he said to me, I was reading the Torah. And in the Torah it says, Hadam hu hanefesh. The blood is the soul. The blood is the soul. What does that mean, Rabbi? Now I'm 20 years old. What does that mean? So the first thing I say to him is I can tell you it doesn't mean that if you emptied a person out of all of their blood and take all of the blood from a human being, suck it all out and put it into a big bowl, then that would be a human soul would be inside there. See, he says to me, I've actually seen that. Okay. He said, yeah, my father used to run a morgue and they suck all the blood out of a person. They put it into a tremendous thing. All this blood, it was enormous, a lot of blood. Okay, at the end of this conversation, I would say that I probably wasn't so into the very large and delicious lunch they had planned. All this blood, all packed into it, he was embalming a person. He sucked all the blood. But that's what Egypt was. You went into Mitzrayim, blood. Thick, oozing blood. Stinky blood. Now, you're a Jew. You walk through here. You see every Egyptian. You can't imagine, I'm sure all the Egyptians are walking around throwing up on the streets. That's what a normal person would do if it's the whole place is packed with blood. You have every Egyptian walking around. He's starving. They're digging at the river, trying to get some water from somewhere. Nothing. Everything is bloody. And there you are. You walk down the streets, totally unaffected by it. You may go into the Nile River. You scoop it out. In the halacha, you can't really drink out of a river. But you go out of a river. You drink it. Ah, delicious water. This is the most yummy thing on the planet. How wonderful. Egyptian comes and please give me some water. Now you have a heart. A Jew has a heart. You have some mercy. You go over to this Egyptian and say, listen, I'll give you some water, buddy. I'm sorry. You know, it's got this thing going on. And you give him some water, and the moment that he holds on to it, it turns into stinky, oozy blood. And there he is, throwing up again. Until somebody, I'm sure a Jew figured it out, that all he had to do was spend a few dollars, and then you'll give him some water, and it'll stay water. That was the first makkah. And that was for at least a week. Like that. And you're walking around. These people who enslaved you. Imagine it was 1863. 1863. A person is an enslaved slave in the United States. They're locked in. And then suddenly it ends. But it doesn't just end. That week, for one full week, every hick southerner that had enslaved this man, he now is tied to something. He's belittled, he's bruising, and he has to go over to the slave. He has to go over to Frederick Douglass, a very famously freed slave. He has to go over to Frederick Douglass and say to him, please, can't you give me some food? I'll even pay you for it. He has to pay his slave. That was dam. That's just one of the makas. And I'm not even going into all the midrashim. That's just the pasuk. You learn a medrash. You understand what blood really was. And how every person who was hurt by it, they understood how this is midah keneged midah. This is corresponding to exactly what you did to us. You're getting it right back. A few weeks pass. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down to Mitzrayim. Goes to Pare, and he says to him, Guess what? Here's one more. Tzfardea. Now, I imagine, like all of us, Pirate didn't necessarily know what the word tzfardea meant. I don't know. Tzfardea. Frogs, crocodiles. I don't know. They get in, and suddenly, if you follow that Gemara, that says one huge frog jumps out. What kind of person sees that frog and isn't crying? You can imagine how big this. It wasn't a big frog like this big. Enormous frog. Thunk. Jumps right out of the Nile River. And then one Mitzri goes over to it and he hits it and out pops frogs. Another one pops frog. I had a Rebbe, he said, imagine if one, two, three times you hit it, it doesn't work. Like, why are people still hitting this huge frog? I like to say, I think I said this last year, this Rebbe of mine said that he was once outside of yeshiva, and the guy had what we used to call a yeshiva shakar. This guy had a car, it wasn't such a great car. It was a little broken down. And the guy whose car it is sticks the keys in. In the olden days, we had to stick the key into the ignition. He sticks the key in, he turns. It doesn't turn on. So the next guy comes along, he says, listen, I'll try. So he sticks the key in, and it goes. It doesn't work. So a third guy says, what's going on? Oh, he's trying to turn on his car. It doesn't work. So the third guy comes along, I'll try. He sticks his on the gas, on the thing. It doesn't work. 17 people later, they're still trying. No? Doesn't that happen all the time? Oh, you didn't know how to do it? No. I was 40 feet away. I'm sure I could figure out better than you how to plug this thing in. Yeah, like before I was trying to figure something out for Reb Yehuda over here, and I was totally wrong. He had it all right. You think everyone thinks they know better. So you had one Mitzri comes over with his big baseball bat. He goes over to this frog, wham! And poof, 1,000 frogs pop out. And another guy come along, he says, no, that's not how you hit it. You have to hit it lefty. And he hits it as a lefty. And then more pop. And they keep doing this until the whole place is full. Now, okay, the kids sing this song. Frogs in your hand and frogs in, frogs here, frogs there, frogs were jumping everywhere. Frogs jumping everywhere. Do you know where they jumped? They went straight down a person's throat. They were inside their stomachs. A person choked on a frog. I choke very easily. Yeah, we know this. I choke very easily. Imagine choking on a frog. It goes down your throat, jumping around in there, and it stays in there, and it hangs out, not for an hour, not for 2 hours, a week, maybe 2-3 weeks, hanging out everywhere. The croaking noises, they must have been going insane from that. Just the noise. I just want to add, not that I'm focusing on all the vomit, but they probably were vomiting off this again. Frogs everywhere. Did you stop and think what it must have looked like? Imagine you're a little kid, a little Jewish kid. Yeah, in America, they don't really have great Jewish, little Jewish kids. Of course, all of our Jewish kids are nice and hailing. But in Eretz Yisrael, the kids there, they run the place. I remember Lag BaOmer. Every kid there is gathering all the wood necessary. And of course, they also gather an Israeli flag or two. And they put it into the bonfire and they burn it. Oh, these are the real, these kids. Not, imagine these kids, they run into Mitzrayim, and they see the whole place. What do you think a little kid would do first? First, he'd try to catch a few of these frogs, right? Play with a few of these frogs. Then his mother will tell them, no, you're going to get warts if you touch the frogs. Okay, fine. But you can't imagine this scene. Frogs everywhere. Frogs in people. Frogs in their food. Frogs in their ovens, frogs in their eyes, frogs in their yarmulkes, frogs everywhere. In their Egyptian yarmulke with the thing. Frogs everywhere. Can you imagine what that must have been like? Think about what that must have been like. And you can go through every makkah. There is a tragedy nowadays. The tragedy nowadays is our limited imagination. A limited imagination. I've said this story before. I had a student in my class. They had just sold a Leonardo da Vinci painting. Something like between $300 and $500 million. A huge amount. And it was so expensive. They're spending that money on a da Vinci painting. Okay. I came to my class the next day, and I said to them, this is years ago, I said to them, they sold the Da Vinci painting $500 million. If you had $1 billion, what would you do with it, with $1 billion? And they're thinking, one boy, he had a shtickle imagination, I'd buy a hotel. Okay. Another boy, he says, this is boy number two, he says, I'd get a new phone. Okay, that's like $700, okay, or maybe a good expensive one, $1,500. Yeah. I get a new phone, and then I'd get sneakers and I don't know. So I said, you have $1 billion left from your $1 billion. What are you gonna get? Totally not sure. No imagination. The loss of imagination. Where are the dreams? If I had $1 billion, what do you do with it? Be able to build this and go there and take care of them? I'm sure I'd buy something. I'd probably, not a new mic, this mic is already expensive, but maybe a new tie. You guys see me wearing the same tie all the time. Maybe I'd get a new tie. But $1 billion? Get a dream. Dream what you could do with $1 billion. People lost their imagination. You read the Parsha, Parsha's Va'era, and Parsha's Bo'i, what a person could accomplish with such dreams. You see what the Jewish people went through in Mitzrayim. Have you stopped and considered what Dam was? Tzvardeya, Kinim, Arav, Dever, Shchin? The only time you ever think about it is if they make a movie about it and then they show the images of the plagues and you're like, whoa, that's actually pretty interesting. Use your imagination. The problem with film is that your imagination, besides for all the other issues, but your imagination is limited to what they describe there. You can't imagine more. That's what people used to say. It's better to read a book than to watch the movie. Why was it better to read the book? Because at least in the book, you can develop your imagination. It's so much more exciting. All the ideas of what the story means. And then you get to the film, and they isolate it, limit it, exactly as one person's perspective was on that book. It's totally limited. A person has an imagination to be able to accomplish things. A person should think about this. The Parsha says, "Vayomer aleihem." Parsha said to the Jewish people, "Yichein Hashem Yehovachem, Hashem should be with you. Kasher ashalach eschem ve'estapachem, like when I send you and your children, ru'u ki ra'a neged p'neichem. You should seek that ra'a is in front of you. Evil is in front of you." And like Rashi says, it was referring to a certain type of star. Ra'a neged p'neichem. Yes, please wait for me afterwards. Thank you. But ra'a neged p'neichem. Ru'u. Pari wanted them not to know, di'u, that terrible things are ahead of you. You've got to imagine it, Pari said. I want to stop you from going. I want to stop you from leaving Mitzrayim, Pari said. I want you to imagine. Ru'u ki ra'a neged p'neichem. Imagine the evil that's going to befall you once you leave this place. Once you leave Mitzrayim. Imagine it. That was Pari's challenge, though. He knew, of course, the Jewish people imagine things. Do we still? You know, these weeks are the weeks that are known as Shevivim. Shevivim. Shemois Va'era Boi B'Shalach Yisrei Mishpatim. Shevivim. Shevivim is an opportunity to work on yourself specifically in what you're looking at. What you look at. A person looks at something, and the last vestige of imagination is that when a person looks at something, he automatically assumes that this is something I could be a part of. You look at an inappropriate picture, an image, a movie, a video, you start imagining yourself as relating to this. You're taking that beautiful gift called imagination, tearing it and ruining it and making it something so lowly and horrible. Shevivim is an opportunity that says, stop. Shevivim needs to be lost and wayward. It means to be confused. Shmois ve'eira boi b'shal yisur mishpatim. We're up to boi now. Shmois ve'eira boi b'shal. If a person could use this time to say, I do want to have an imagination. I do want to have an imagination. I do have dreams. What I could be someday. I spoke to one of my dear friends yesterday. He was in a bad mood. He was feeling down. I said to him, wouldn't you like to be in a great mood? Doesn't a person, and you should know, somebody made an interesting point just 1 second ago. Some people don't. Some people are not big enough for it. Some people do not dream big enough. And they automatically assume, no. I'd rather be doing absolutely nothing and laying in my bed with no imagination than actually dream big. This week's parasha gives us that opportunity. Parai said to us, I'd love for you to use your imagination, ki ro'o neged p'neichem. I'd love for you to use it for evil. But you have an imagination that you could use for so much. What I could be. I love reading biographies. You read a biography, read about someone, maybe someone relatable, and you learn what they did in their life, what difficulties they went through. I just read a Holocaust book, but the people in that book, it's shocking. The person in the book is 14 years old, and how he pushes himself, and he's uplifted, he smiles, even in that book. During the Holocaust, he was in Auschwitz. You think Auschwitz, you'd imagine it was the worst camp, Auschwitz. He went to Auschwitz, he went to Mauthausen from Auschwitz. Now, my grandmother's in Mauthausen. I always thought it wasn't as serious as the other camps. He writes, when he got to Mauthausen, Auschwitz was a walk in the park compared to Mauthausen. That's what he said. And then he went from Mauthausen to Gunskirchen, which my grandmother also was in. And I figured Gunskirchen, at least, that was probably a light camp. And he said that Mauthausen was a walk in the park compared to Gunskirchen. He was liberated from Gunskirchen. He said Auschwitz was better than Mauthausen. Mauthausen better than Gunskirchen. And Gunskirchen was the worst. And yet, he's an uplifted, positive person. That takes an imagination. What a Yid is able to accomplish. I give you a bracha. This coming Shabbos, you have free time. You have time to rest. You have time to reinvigorate yourself. If you can't eat cholent, you have time to have some potato kugel. If it's not potato kugel, you have some time to have some good steak. You have some good meat we're having. I think it's Hasselbeck and Lachmanjin and good stuff. Okay, we're having good stuff. Oh, the challah. I can't wait for the challah. But you have to have an imagination. And Hashem should reinvigorate you with this Shabbos and give you that imagination to know that you're on an amazing path.